Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining another episode of the Mobility Podcast. We're really excited to join you all today with a great guest, the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation Secretary, Yasmin Grazmian. She's taken office and was unanimously confirmed by the Senate May 27, 2020. As you all know, we had the privilege of interviewing former Secretary Richards as part of the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation when we had a first discussion, just talking about all the great work that the state of Pennsylvania is doing. I know a lot of us are very excited about the work we see around automated and connected vehicles, but also there's just so much great work that they're doing, everything from workforce safety to thinking about how we bridge the difficult divide around urban and rural connections, which Pennsylvania has a lot of as well. And so, you know, we're really privileged to be with the new secretary here today. And as always, my name is Greg Rodriguez. Views are our own. Greg Rogers, you want to introduce yourself?
Yes, hello. Greg Rogers here. Thank you, Secretary Grazmian, for joining us. And really looking forward to this discussion.
And Pete Gould, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. And this is Pete Gould with Catapult Policy Strategies. And also just want to second everyone else's very excited to continue the conversation about everything that PennDOT's doing in Pennsylvania on all things transportation and mobility.
Great. So thank you again, everybody, for joining us. So I want to stop talking. I want to turn it over to our guest of honor. And one question we like to start off with all our guests is what inspires you around transportation and why are you excited to be leading an agency with so much responsibility? I mean, just reading the amount of things that you as secretary have to take on, policies affecting highways, urban and rural transportation, airports, railroads, ports, and waterways. I think we forget about what the word transportation encompasses. So I think our listeners would really appreciate hearing what drives you and what inspires you, especially during a challenging time.
That's a great question. I really appreciate it. There are so many things that goes on in the world of transportation. It's the lifeblood of our society. I mean, when you look at transportation, it provides, especially lately during COVID, it provides access to everything that we need in everyday life, right? It's providing access to the e-commerce. It's providing access to the essential workers. It's providing access to the people who are keeping us safe. It provides access to the people to go to schools. It's pretty much everything. It's the lifeblood of our society. And, you know, I always had passion for transportation because I was always fascinated by building, by bridges, by highways, by building communities, the impact of transportation in people's lives. And, you know, this COVID pretty much brought everything, exasperated everything that was related to transportation, right? I mean, it brought out all the vulnerabilities we had in terms of our equity in transportation. It also, you know, brought attention to how important it is to provide safety during this period for the public, safety in transportation during for the public, as well as the folks who are providing, you know, resources for us, whether to supermarket, to our houses, to, you know, everything that we need every day to survive.
Great. And I really like your use of the term access. I think we've talked about it a lot on the podcast and in my work. You know, I feel like the value of transportation is often underrated because a lot of us are lucky to have a vehicle and not be relying upon public transportation. So I think, you know, your focus on access is very much appreciated. And I'm curious, you know, we obviously are in an unprecedented time. You mentioned COVID-19. A lot of us are very concerned about the state of transit in the event we don't get more stimulus funding. You know, as Secretary of Transportation, I think, again, you know, in your role, sometimes we don't appreciate the coordination that goes on with local and regional entities. Can you give us a little more insight on the coordination you're doing around transit right now and maybe any initiatives that you're involved in to make sure we can withstand, you know, these current challenges on the system? And do you see, you know, what are any thoughts you have for a path forward to make sure we come out of COVID-19, hopefully with a more equitable and inclusive transportation system?
Sure. So just a little background about what's going on during this COVID-19 and the impact of it on the transit system. As you may have heard, the ridership on the shared ride services is down. The ridership for SEPTA and Port Authority, the two biggest transit agencies, are down by 65%. You know, the revenue as a result of that is down, is way down, I should say. I heard the other day a number around $1 million per day of loss of revenue for SEPTA, which is huge. So this whole COVID-19 situation has really impacted the transit system, on the ridership, on the revenue. Fortunately, federal government came through with the CARES Act funding, which is a stimulus package which kept the transit agencies afloat with their operational costs, and it keeps them going till the end of 2020 and a little bit into 2021. However, the future of transit agencies is still unknown. They've lost a lot of revenue. They're still counting on more relief packages coming from the federal government. There is much of a talk about another stimulus package, another relief package, which we don't know the exact number of it. There is going to be something for the transit agencies. So that's on the funding side, on the ridership side. You know, as you may have heard, initially at the beginning of the COVID-19, the transit operators got hit really hard, and there were a lot of cases of positive tested transit operators. And it took a while for all the transit agencies, as well as us. PennDOT was working very closely with the public transit agencies throughout the state to figure out a way to create a safe environment within the buses, within the transit services for the riders, as well as for the bus operators and all the operators. So that took a while to figure out. We're in a much better place, but folks are still working from home. People are still teleworking. We continue to telework until everybody feels safe to go out and go back to the work and so forth. But we wanted to make sure that the people who are relying on these transit agencies as the only ways and means of getting to work, the essential workers, the people who are actually working at the nurses, the doctors, the folks who have no other means of getting to work, that they feel comfortable and safe using the transit agencies. That was absolute concern of ours. And, you know, we spend a lot of time and attention to make sure that we create a safe environment for the drivers, for the riders, for the staff, everyone. On the other issue, which is again related to funding of the transit agencies, is what we refer to as Act 44 of 2007, which is the money that we receive from Pennsylvania Turnpike of a magnitude of $450 million on an annual basis. This year, the payment from the Turnpike to PennDOT has been delayed, because, as you know, the revenue was down with Pennsylvania Turnpike as well, and they were not able to make their payments. And they're seeing more traffic coming back. The revenue is picking up, and they're considering making payments in January of 2021. However, we need this funding from the Turnpike because it goes towards the state of good repair projects and reliable transit fleets and expanded services and some of the other initiatives with the transit agencies. So, you know, the impact is not with the transit agencies alone, but it also through indirect impact from, you know, less of a traffic on the highway system, which resulted in, you know, a delay in payment from Pennsylvania Turnpike to PennDOT.
Great. I want to touch on one thing I think is really interesting when you're talking about the Turnpike. I know you have experience also working with airports, working with Amtrak, as well as local governments. How much of that coordination is going on right now, again, in unprecedented times, to really, you know, make sure communication is flowing and to make sure that, you know, as you said, that the state of good repair, you know, maintenance projects and things are still moving forward. Again, as we get ready to come out of COVID-19, hopefully with good news around vaccinations, I was hoping you can touch on that a little bit, especially with, you know, all the impacts to airports right now are hopefully temporary and hopefully a robust return to air travel. I know Philadelphia is a major hub. I'm curious if, on the coordination front, if you can provide any insights.
So on the coordination, we're in constant communications with Amtrak. On their services, Keystone Corridor is one that, you know, we constantly talk to them, and we wanted to make sure that we understand their challenges, whether it's with their workforce and having people or with their revenue, with ridership. And our deputy secretary for multimodal is constantly talking to Amtrak to make sure we understand, you know, this COVID impact on their services. And with regards to funding, like transit agencies, Amtrak received some relief from the federal government. But I mean, the loss of ridership with Amtrak and in the Northeast Corridor is huge. It's huge. And, you know, to an extent, it's irrecoverable right now. So we do talk to them about, you know, continuation of their operations on their capital program. Our commitment is still there as long as we receive the money from Act 44, the $450 million. With regards to the airport, so there are numerous local airports that are under the jurisdiction of PennDOT. We support them again on the operational side. We did get some relief money, which were dispersed to the all the airports, local airports. However, you mentioned Philadelphia Airport and also Pittsburgh Airport, you know, the situation with those two airports and the way they got impacted from COVID, it's amazing. It's been very tough. You know, we talk to them to see how we can support them with regards to, you know, initially it was with regards to all the PPEs that all the agencies needed, but they're kind of independent. We're in communications with them. I recently had a conversation with the CEO of Philadelphia Airport regarding some of the new protocols that they're planning to put in place in collaboration with Jefferson Hospital, which was very reassuring, I have to say. They're in discussions to come up with ways, you know, to make sure that people have that confidence level to fly again. That's part of the problem. You know, a lot of people are very concerned about the safety of air travel. And, you know, the CEO of the airport is actually talking to leaders at Jefferson Hospital through some testing, multiple levels of testing to make sure, and this is for the passengers, obviously, put some measures in place to make sure that that people who want to travel feel safe about traveling, air travel again.
That's great. I think it's really inspiring to hear those conversations going on and just like people coming together to produce the vaccine. I think I've been really inspired by the work across disciplines. You just mentioned the academic sector and hospitals and the airports working together, and hopefully all that around this feeling of innovation, and I think this appetite to come out better and to challenge the status quo. I think, you know, that's the inspiring part of this, and hopefully the opportunity with COVID-19. Pete, do you want to pivot for us and ask another question to the secretary?
Of course. And again, Secretary, thank you very much for joining us. You know, my question is, you know, Pennsylvania, and in particular, the kind of greater Pittsburgh region has from an early day has been a real hotbed and a source of innovation in the kind of autonomy and all things mobility realm. And I know PennDOT has been playing a proactive and collaborative role in fostering that innovation while also, you know, ensuring that regulations and oversight protects the public. So I'm curious, as you approach this job and the kind of broader ecosystem, what do you see the role of PennDOT and you as secretary around, you know, fostering and shaping the future of mobility?
Well, I have to say the future mobility is, it's the framework we have created for future mobility is focused on obviously, a safer transportation system, a more sustainable transportation system, a more accessible transportation system, and ultimately a more equitable transportation system for everybody. And so with regards to safer, our programs related to connected and automated vehicles are rooted in their potential to drastically reduce vehicle crashes. Sustainable, we ensure that we have a robust multimodal program and expanding electrical vehicle efforts to make sure that transportation works for everybody. On the accessible, transportation should be accessible for all. We want that mobility to be extended to everyone. It's not just for, the rural area or the urban area. It's for everybody. And we wanted to, we've started to track whether our AV testers are being tested and using the vehicles that are wheelchair accessible. So that's really important to us. On the equitable side, our department is engaged in efforts to understand how race and racism affects or predicts mobility and access for Pennsylvanians. And we plan to use all that information to design a more equitable transportation system. Again, when we talk about equity, is not we take all inclusive approach to transportation. It's for urban areas, it's for rural areas, it's for people with disability and disadvantaged people. So that's our approach to future mobility.
That's excellent. My follow up was going to be, what area in this space, whether it's just better transit, more frequent transit, vehicle electrification, autonomy, mobility on demand, any of these fun buzzwords, I'm curious, where do you see, the biggest opportunities to maximize the positive societal or social benefits and societal?
It's all the above, Pete. I mean, I can't really point out, one specific area. The next generation of mobility solution will be derived from automation, such as automated shuttles, personal delivery device, ride hailing, truck platooning. I can talk a little bit about that if you want. Like this low-speed automated shuttles could be used to provide a new mobility solution to disadvantaged communities that have no existing services. You may have heard about Smart Columbus program in Ohio.
Yeah.
Using these low-speed shuttles. It's really maximizing the benefits of new technology for disadvantaged group of people. Other areas, other examples, this personal delivery device have a potential to be a beneficial part of mobility landscape. You may have heard again that in Los Angeles, these PDDs will soon be used to provide meals for shut-ins, which is a great opportunity. Again, back in Columbus, Ohio, the Smart City Grant is being used for ride-hailing flexibility, providing free maternal health trips for low-income women. And this is for the purpose of combating Ohio's high infant mortality rate in the Black communities. The other thing we are very proud of is the recent truck platooning demonstration with the other Smart Belt states, Ohio and Michigan. They provided transported food. If you've probably heard about it, Locomation provided transported food to a food bank from Pennsylvania all the way to Ohio and Detroit, which is a great story.
Yeah, no, excellent. I'm going to kick it over to Greg Rogers if he's got a question, but then we could probably circle back on some of those points as well.
Yeah, thanks, Pete. One thing that that we're constantly looking at here on the podcast is not just what the technologies are that are being developed, but why we're developing them. So I really appreciated, Secretary, how you're focusing on, what our goals are with technology, safety, sustainability, access, and equity. And I think that it points to the fact that those are the areas we should be focusing on why we're using the technology and how we're using it. Another question that, you know, we've been visiting this year is how do we build back better after this pandemic and take forward some of the lessons we've learned? I think that people have really started to see, like, I think a lot of the benefits of active transportation in their neighborhoods, being able to walk and bike during these shelter in place orders. And so I think this sort of leads to two sort of questions here, which is one, you know, how do we plan for the future in terms of you know, sort of the funding element, right? Making sure that we're able to afford maintenance and of the roads that we currently have. And number two, how do we really take advantage of this opportunity to look at expanding the availability of alternative modes like biking, micromobility, and walking?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a great question. And first of all,
it's a big one.
You brought up the issue of funding, and I initially talked about the funding challenges that we are faced on the transit side. I have to say it's no different on the highway bridge side. As you know, Pennsylvania, PennDOT is responsible for 40,000 miles of highways and over 25,000 bridges. And we have just a huge complex asset. And I'm just talking about these are the highways and bridges that PennDOT as an agency is responsible for. In addition to that, all the locals, they have another 80,000 miles of locals and another several thousand miles of bridges that they have to maintain it safely. And they also receive funding from PennDOT. And our funding situation has been challenged like everything else during this COVID-19. Initially, because the traffic volumes were down at the beginning of the COVID, the first months, March, April, May, we lost a lot of revenue. And to date, we have lost over $400 million of revenue from gas tax. You may know, gas tax at the state and the federal level we call it motor license fund, is a source of a revenue to pay for the highways and bridges. And $400 million of state money being down, it's quite a bit of money. It also, you also have to keep in mind that, you know, for every penny that we spend at the state level from our gas tax, we also receive another two pennies from the feds, but we have to spend our penny first to be able to get reimbursed from the federal on a lot of our federally funded projects. Transportation formula, especially for highway bridges, is very complex. And when you lose the revenue, and this is the revenue that we've lost, it's very difficult to be able to build it back up again, right? When you lose it, you've lost it. And although the traffic numbers are back to where they were, it's still, you know, the revenue we've lost is the revenue we've lost. And you may have heard that during the budget season, we actually asked for $600 million of bonding authorization, which wasn't approved, but we're hoping that some actions will be taken into the next session of the legislators. The governor came in and he puts some temporary measures in place for a stopgap so we can carry on with the projects. And honestly, initially, we were thinking of shutting down all the projects. So what I'm trying to say is we're in a dire situation of funding not being sufficient for what we wanted to do to maintain a safe infrastructure for our people, for the public. And we are looking into ways to, first of all, you know, compensate for what we've lost on a temporary fix, on a short term, and also looking into long-term solutions for our transportation and paying for transportation. You just talked about technology, and, you know, the vehicles are becoming more fuel efficient. We are encouraging people to pivot into electrical vehicles, buy more electrical vehicles. We are looking into ways to enhance the charging stations within the state on the interstate system. We wanted to have clean air. We wanted to improve, you know, the situation with the greenhouse gas emissions. And there are a lot of positive things that will come out of it, but obviously that's going to impact our revenue. So we need to look into new ways of funding our transportation. New ways also include people's behavior and, you know, the next generation of transportation. And we actually put a task force together to look into people's attitude, behavior, the after post-COVID. I mean, we're very concerned about how folks are going to view their transit system. Are they going to go back into using it? The folks who do have an option of whether they wanted to take it or they wanted to drive to work, are they going to be comfortable to go back into the transit system? Are they going to be enough cars on the road to pay for the, you know, the revenue that we were counting on? There's all kinds of stuff that we're looking into, and we actually put a team together, a panel together to study the post-COVID-19 behavior of public related to public transportation. Now, you mentioned but more pedestrians actually traveling, you know, from either from their place of living to work or to shopping areas, more people on bikes. As you know, there was a shortage of bikes this year.
That was a great headline to see, honestly.
Great. I agree with you. And yeah. I also heard from the Cindy Don, the secretary for DCNR, that, you know, the parks were getting so crowded that they would, some of the parks, they would reach a capacity and they would turn people around, say, you know, you got to come back later. I mean, this is great. These are some of the positive outcomes of COVID-19, right? But we also have to make sure we adjust our transportation system to these new ways of living for public. And we're still looking into it. We actually wanted to make sure that, again, safety is at the core and the top of everything we do, right? Priority for everything. Going back to those concepts of safety, sustainability, accessibility, and equitable transportation system. Back to the bike and walkways, we wanted to make sure that there is enough provisions in anything we do, whether we are paving the roads, that their shoulders are, you know, there are some simple things we can do with pavement markings, that we provide provisions for the bikers on the local roads. If there is some crossings, you know, pedestrian or bikers crossing at some major streets, that there is proper signage there, that we wouldn't really put anybody at danger. And we've started looking into ways to create a map of all these crossings and do an evaluation and see how we could actually compile a list of all these projects that we need to address. So yes, we have to look at things differently and we have to evaluate it differently and adjust to how people want to use their transportation system, you know, and make sure that we respond to that by providing them a safe system.
Fantastic.
Well, great. And thank you for that. I want to pick up on that as we get ready to close out here. And you know, some of the projects that I'm working on are really focused on people-focused design. And with, you know, the challenges around infrastructure funding right now, it seems like every week is infrastructure week, unfortunately. And I'm wondering, is this an opportunity to rethink infrastructure and planning within our communities and more of a mobility-focused system? It sounds, you know, I think that encompasses some of the things around equity and accessibility, because as many of us know, you know, our current transportation system is designed to favor vehicles and cars. You know, as we come out of COVID-19 and with the economic pressures and things like Vision Zero and safety becoming priorities and walkability and active transportation, do you see this as an opportunity to rethink how we invest in infrastructure and especially when we think about, you know, automation and connected vehicles, just kind of, you know, what are you planning for over the next 5 years as we come out of this and face some economic constraints, but also, you know, opportunities to rethink transportation? I think that'd be a great question to close things out on.
Yes, it's all the above, Greg. It's you have to have a very comprehensive system or comprehensive plan for your transportation system, I should say, in the state of Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is such a large state and so diverse in terms of our transportation. And also this, you know, the way the density is dispersed throughout the state, right? You cannot have one formula for everybody. You really have to have, as you mentioned, a very comprehensive plan. And based on the comprehensive plan that you put together, which includes freight is going to be a big part of it. Technologies, as I said, is going to be in the area, closing the gap in many things that we do. We really need to bring in more technology into transportation for a number of different reasons, for the safety, for reduction in accidents, for, being ready, future ready for automated vehicles and connected vehicles. I mean, it requires a huge amount of integration of transport technology into our transportation system. We also, as we talked about earlier, we need to make sure that it's very inclusive for those urban areas where we're working towards Vision Zero. And we wanted to make sure that folks have a choice in micromobility, folks have a choice in using their bikes if they want to. There's like opportunities. Safety, again, is at the core of everything we do, right? And when we are preparing our transportation system, whether it's in the urban area or it's in the rural area, we have to take safety into consideration in anything we're building. And again, we also have to make sure that transit system is provided in every counties that we have, because a lot of the folks, you'll be surprised what percentage of the folks in our rural areas are actually relying on our public transit system that we are providing for them, the shared ride system. They use it to get to work. They use it to go to their doctor's appointments, to get to their parents. It's a pretty important part of people's life and livelihood, I should say. And we got to make sure that, that's available to everyone. And so it's, as you mentioned, it's really a comprehensive plan that we would use as a living document to build our transportation and fund our transportation around this document. Again, it's never enough, the funding that we have to spend in different areas, but we are trying to be creative. We are trying to come up with additional sources of funding and to be able to cover all needs for the people of Pennsylvania.
That's great. And maybe one more question quickly, since you did bring up the correlation between safety and technology. Are you able to give us a quick update on the automated driving system demonstration grant you received around safe integration of automated vehicles in work zones?
Yes. So we recently executed the legal agreement with FHWA, and we are waiting for the funds to become available. We're also finalizing the legal agreements with our partners on this project. We're pretty optimistic that we will have a kickoff meeting in January and start with the planning and system engineering in February. By year two, we hope to transition to simulation and closed course testing.
That's very exciting. So I know a lot of us are tracking that closely. So thank you for that update. And we're very excited about the work and investment in time and resources that Pennsylvania is doing around the future of mobility. And I think, three words that I think resonate really, really well with this conversation. Again, we really appreciate your time, our access, choice, and safety. I'm hoping, and then you also mentioned the terms future ready and creativity. I think all these things are going to be important themes as we enter into 2021 with a new administration and hopefully some additional grant funding to help shape the way around everything you talked about today. So thank you again, Secretary, for your time. We really appreciate it, you giving us an update on all the great things Pennsylvania is doing. I know that we will very much welcome the chance to hopefully check back in with you maybe the middle of next year once we have a new administration in place and just to get an update on all the great work that you're doing. But with that, is there any place that people can go to learn more about your work and what the Department of Transportation is doing?
Absolutely. There are multiple websites that they can look up for the work that we're doing at PennDOT. Depends on what kind of information you're looking for, but you always go to PennDOT's website and there you know, all these different areas on the funding. You can find information on the safety, on the programs, on diversity inclusion program that we're having, that they can get all the information.
Thank you for that. I know you're doing so many different things, and we're looking forward to learning more ourselves, as we always do with these conversations. So thank you again for your time. I'm going to close us out. Thank you to our listeners. Really appreciate you all joining us for this great conversation. My name is Greg Rodriguez. You can find me at Smarter Transpo and on LinkedIn. Pete Gould, where can we find you?
Hey, this is Pete Gould. You can find me primarily on Twitter, either at Pete_Gould, or you can find the more corporate policy at Catapult Policy.
Sounds good. Thank you, Pete. And how about you, Greg Rodgers?
Yeah, as always, you can find me at AVGregR on all channels except for TikTok. Still haven't figured that one out yet.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you, everyone. Please take care during this holiday season. Stay safe and well, and we look forward to a productive and hopeful 2021. Thank you for listening, everyone.
We're so close. Put a mask on.
Thank you, everyone. Take care.
Happy holidays.
Thank you again, Secretary.
Thank you. Bye-bye.